M. Jackson, W266, DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Jennifer Kuiper in Chicago. An 85-year-old white man who shot a black teenager who approached the wrong house in Kansas City, Missouri, while trying to pick up his younger brothers, has been charged. Clay County Prosecutor Zach Thompson.
After a thorough review of the case file, the appropriate laws, and information gained during the investigation phase of the case, I filed two felony counts,
including first degree assault. Ralph Jarl's aunt, Faith Spoonmore, asks,
do you think if he was a white 16-year-old boy and he banged that door, do you think it would have been the same outcome?
Thompson says that there was a racial component to the incident. No arrests reported after Saturday night shooting at a Dadeville, Alabama birthday party. Four people are dead and police say at least 32 injured. Among those killed, 18-year-old Philstavius Dowdell, who recently committed to play football at Jacksonville State next year. It was his sister's party. Their mother, LaTanya Allen, saying of that night,
I heard the gunshot. I started to run from the building. Then I came back when it stopped.
Police say at least 32 people were injured in the shooting. New federal rules on tax credits for over a dozen electric vehicles kick in tomorrow. More from our Steve Futterman.
10 vehicles will be eligible for a $7,500 tax credit, including two Tesla models and the Chevrolet Bolt. Seven other vehicles will get a $3,750 credit. But for other vehicles, including Volvo's popular EV, there will be no credits. Jeff Schuster is with LMC Automotive.
When you look at price and then you look at taking credits away on vehicles that are already quite expensive, that could have some ramification, at least in the near term.
In the long term, he says, the EV share of the market is going to grow, eventually overtaking traditional gas-powered vehicles. Steve Futterman, CBS News.
A new CBS News poll finds that Americans want Congress to act to prevent the nation from defaulting on its debt. CBS News Deputy Director of Surveys Jennifer DePinto.
As a potential debt ceiling crisis looms, Americans continue to hold negative views of the economy. Just 33% say it's good, and their outlook is not very optimistic. Over the next year, most expect the economy to either be slowing or actually in a recession.
In the streets of Sudan's capital, Khartoum, a violent conflict between Sudan's two top generals. The United Nations estimates that at least 185 people have been killed and more than 1,800 wounded. Diplomats on four continents are trying to broker a truce. The Biden administration is urging Americans trapped in the African nation of Sudan to shelter in place. On Wall Street, the Dow closed up 101 points. NASDAQ jumped 34. This is CBS News.
Streamline how you hire with Indeed. Their powerful hiring platform makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/.
Bringing some sanity to the airwaves. The Shaw 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matnair. Here's what you need to know. Life in prison without parole for Mark Jensen of Pleasant Prairie. The 63-year-old was convicted for the second time of killing his wife Julie by poisoning her with antifreeze and suffocation in 1998. Jensen's attorneys maintain that Julie Jensen was depressed and killed herself in order to frame her husband. Jensen was first convicted in 2008, but the Wisconsin Supreme Court ruled in 2021 that he deserved a new trial. Wisconsin voters only approving about half of statewide school referendums on the April ballot. In last year's spring and fall elections, voters okayed 80%. This spring's election saw the lowest passage rate for school district referendums in over a decade. This year's total dollar amount is $650 million compared to just over $1.7 billion that was approved in 2020. I'm Jane Matnair. This is Civic Media News.
Accidents can be life-changing, no matter how careful you are. But with Gingras Thompson and Wax, you're not alone. For decades, they've been fighting for the rights of people just like you. They'll let you focus on your recovery while they handle the legal complexities. If you or a loved one has been hurt or killed due to someone else's negligence, contact them now. You may deserve compensation.
All in to win, Gingras Thompson and Wax, GTWLawyers.com.
Charged, never convicted. The Devil's Advocates.
Jim Santel for just a few more minutes. As you point out, this is a civil trial, not a criminal trial. Do you think that the Trump org will end up with the death penalty under New York law?
Letitia James, she's doing a civil case, right? This is a criminal matter.
Oh, it is. So I misunderstood.
It is, yes.
Normally I leave the being wrong to Dom.
Right?
Listen Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. for the Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Max Inc. Radio with Dennis Graham from Rockonson.
Appreciate all the support of Mad Radio 92.7. And by the way, a tip of the hat to Civic Media. That was a great article on the Cap Times by Paul Fanlon. You guys got a great model that you're growing around the state, local interest with radio stations throughout these different markets. And a tip of the hat, and you're focusing on local music and nobody's doing it. So great job.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio Saturday night, 6 to midnight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Muskego to Pewaukee, always streaming at waukradio.com. The Shaw 101 FM, Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You're listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show.
So yesterday, you may remember me talking about the truckers down on the border blocking the southern border on the Mexico side. Because, look, you know, Greg Abbott decided, hey, it'd be a good idea. We're going to stop every single truck and we're going to inspect every single truck. And we're going to let all the produce go rotten. We're going to stop these trucks from making their deliveries on time. We're going to harass and intimidate and we're going to do all of this stuff. Because we can. And I said yesterday, before this really hit big news, that this was an opportunity for Abbott to make things worse for Biden. Because what this is really going to do is cause more inflation. So when you're going to buy strawberries or whatever produce you buy, the costs are going to skyrocket. Because there's going to be less produce at your supermarket. Because they're boogering up the whole thing. Now, I've said from the beginning, I'm against the way we do cross-border trucking. I've been against it for a very long time. I like the way it was done back, you know, well before NAFTA. But we are where we are. This is politically motivated. This is because he can. And here to share some thoughts on what's going on our southern border, and maybe tell us what's going on and what we should be doing, I've asked Rick Levy to come talk with us. Rick is the president of the Texas AFL-CIO. He is down in Texas now. Rick, thanks for making time for us.
Thank you, Rick. I mean, damn, you paint a really pretty picture of what's going on down here. So, talking about it. It's just like each day you wonder, how can it get worse? How can it get weirder? We have a state that we're in the energy capital of the world, allegedly, and we can't keep the lights on. We defund our public schools. We create all these kind of side issues around trans kids and some of the meanest orders that I've ever seen from a governor, going after doctors and parents for trying to take care of their kids. And now, in the midst of all of this, he decides, and I just want to say, they're not inspecting the trucks for smugglers or contraband. They don't have the legal authority to do that. What they're doing is inspecting the trucks for mechanical issues and inspection stickers and things like that, and stopping everyone. And I think that just really highlights the hypocrisy of what's going on here. You said it. It's trying to create more of a crisis. It's trying to compete with Florida about who can be the Trumpiest non-Trump. And that's what's driving public policy in Texas, and it's a damn shame.
No, and this is one of those things where I think people have to be aware. You know, we're in a moment where everybody's hyper aware of inflation. We're all being socked by it.
Yeah.
Every time we turn around, price increases are happening. You know, if it's not the energy, you're not going to the gas pumps, getting screwed there because, hey, the oil companies are gouging the heck out of us because they're not increasing production, even though they could. And they've got leases that are already out there and Biden's giving out, you know, thousands of them. It's this stuff going on. It's the leveraging that's going on because Greg Abbott can. And
well, it's sabotage. It's sabotage. It's the same thing that's happening on the national scene when Obama was elected. What did Mitch McConnell say he was going to do? he was going to make sure that he was a one-term president. He was going to stop everything that Obama tried to do. That's what they're doing. So now the whole point is to create a political crisis and blame it on Biden. And to avoid, frankly, dealing with that he's created. Can I say that?
No.
Dealing with the stuff that he's created. We're a failed state right now. We are a failed state in terms of operating government for the people. And rather than deal with those issues, we're doing stunts like this that, as you point out, are going to raise prices for every single person in this country, and going to, you know, really cause deep hardship on the border. People don't understand the dependence that folks on the border have for commerce. Before all this craziness, the border was like a little thing. I mean, people shop back and forth. They go back and forth. They get goods back and forth. They go to the doctor back and forth. And now, you know, people are living in severe hardship. And the truckers, you know, those guys were stuck on that bridge for over 24 hours with no food, no water, no place to go to the bathroom, and just stuck there. And so ultimately today, Abbott had to cave and open up the border, but only in one place. And so we're still, in all of the other places in Texas, we're still dealing with this. And unfortunately, y'all are going to pay the price, too.
No, I mean, this makes Chris Christie's Bridgegate look like just a mild prank. This affects the entire country. This isn't just New York.
Yeah. And the other thing that it's, you know, it's each what he's really trying to show is that he is the, you know, he is the right wing border person. And it's so bad, Rick, that he has spent $4 billion, that's with the B, dollars on this quote unquote border security, where he has sent National Guard troops down there for over a year. And what the reports are coming out now is that those National Guard folks have nothing to do. Suicides are at an all-time high among National Guard troops. And the one thing that's really interesting is that those National Guard troops are unionizing with the Texas State Employees Union. National Guard troops, Rick, are unionizing with the Texas State Employees Union because of the horrific conditions that they're down there being a political stunt. You know, National Guard folks, they have lives. You know, they're supposed to be called up in times of emergency. These folks are being away from their families, away from their jobs, and sitting down there. The latest report was that they've all been patrolling the ranches of his wealthy campaign contributors. That's all they do to guard against trespassing. And so in the face of that, now we see this thing where we're literally tying up the whole border just so that he can continue to wave the flag and scapegoat immigrants for all the problems that he and his minions are causing.
And the amount of money is just obscene.
$4 billion.
It must be nice that you guys have the best education system, health care, the best roads. Yeah. It must be great to have a perfectly funded state.
Yeah, that we have all this extra cabbage lying around. It's absurd.
Listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Rick Levy, president of the Texas AFL-CIO, talking about what's going on down on the southern border. What do you think of Marsha Blackburn's thought to wall off the southern border of Tennessee? Are you in favor of a border between Tennessee and Alabama?
I think connecting the words Marsha Blackburn and thought in the same sentence doesn't really compute in my head. And you know, I mean, it's if it wasn't so sad, it would be silly. It would be funny. I wouldn't dignify that with even. I mean, what do you do with that? I mean, how do you even respond to that in a way that makes sense? Yeah. It's absurd.
Now, what we're told is, you know, the news that I've been seeing is that things are just horrible in Texas because, you know, now you're being overrun by migrants coming through. What does the border look like that you're seeing?
Yeah, so the border, it's first of all, those you know, we're not overrun by anybody. But it is true that there's some really horrific conditions down there because we still are dealing with the legacy of Donald Trump's Title 42, where we're consigning people who are fleeing persecution to living in squalor and horrible conditions, and that needs to stop. We still are not complying with international law. What we're doing down there also is we're stuffing the jails full of people because Abbott can't enforce immigration laws. But he's got National Guard people down there arresting people all over the border region for trespassing. And that's a state crime, and they're sitting in state jails, and we're paying for all of that at the same time. And a lot of the border communities I was visiting, I was down there, I guess, 2 weeks ago, talking to some teachers, and just the level of stress that it's all putting on, you know, public teachers and public servants to deal with all this stuff. It's tough. I mean, it is an area that needs a solution. It doesn't need demagoguing. It doesn't need scapegoating. It doesn't need racism.
And this is the thing that gets me. I mean, all we seem to get out of the right wing is what you said, the kind of demagoguery, the kind of, the kind of solutions that only cause more problems. And you know, they do it so that they can, you know, get headlines. They do it so that they can get further ahead politically. It isn't about actually good governance. It isn't about solving problems. It's about, hey, look at me, and hey, send me campaign contributions more than anything. And that's a problem.
I'm against that. Yeah. And the thing is, there are such interesting and exciting things going on in Texas. We have Beto O'Rourke is running for governor. And Rick, I don't know if you've seen her or not, but he is running on an explicitly pro-union, pro-jobs, pro-climate jobs campaign, explicitly running on pro-public education. And the race is tightening. And I think it's driving Abbott to go more and more, you know, crazy with his folks. We have some really cool organizing going on in unions down here in Texas. Unions are investing in Texas in a way that has never happened before. And we see the results as, like, the Houston airport just adopted a $15 blanket executive order, minimum pay. Same thing's going on in Dallas. They're organizing. Starbucks are organizing. Meatpacking plants are organizing. Nonprofits are organizing. People are organizing, you know. And so I think that the thing that lifts my spirits is we talk about how, how outrageous these Abbott executive orders are is that there really is a counter movement going on that I think is going to continue to grow and grow until we change the state. You know, the farther and the crazier they get, I got to think someday people are going to wake up.
Yeah, I keep saying that. I keep hoping that at least.
At some point.
You know, I'm predicting 22 is going to be a bloodbath for Democrats, and Republicans are going to go further off the extreme, where Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert, they're going to be mild compared to what we're going to end up with. My hope is that, you know, we wake up and go, no, this is a bit too far, and we rubber band back to somewhere near sane. But I don't know that to be the case.
Yeah, I'm not confident in that. I keep saying, and I can't tell you how many times I've said, oh, well, this one is going to do it. I mean, once they see this one, they're all going to come to their senses, and it's not happening. And I think the problem is that, you know, there's no ability to have a conversation because people wind themselves up in these little bubbles where all they hear is constant reinforcement of this craziness. You know, it's not like they even know what's going on. It's not even like they get another side to even think about. I wish I was more confident, but what I am confident in is that the labor movement in Texas is going to be fighting and clawing and scratching.
Yeah. Let's go back to the trucking
to send the state in a different direction.
Let's go back to the trucking situation right now. Tomorrow, what are they going to continue the inspections tomorrow? Are we expecting this to go long term? Yeah. And what do you expect the Biden administration to do? Is there anything that Biden can do to stop this? Is there anything that the truckers can do? Anything here?
Well, I think that what we saw today was Abbott trying to, as we say down here, crawfish and try and figure a way out of this thing, because not only are the truckers pissed, not only are the folks on the border pissed, but Republican businesses are pissed because they can't, can I say, are mad because they can't, I'm sorry, that's twice. I won't do it again, I promise. I'm going to clean it up because, you know, like you said, this is hurting everybody and it's not accomplishing anything. So he opened up one bridge today in Farr, Texas, PHARR, and my sense is that he will be forced to retreat from this. You know what he does? He comes out with this stuff. Like, for example, you know, he came up with this stunt that he was going to take all the migrants that came across the border and put them on a bus to D.C. You know, this was his big thing. I think it was last week. And then you look at the fine print and, only if they want to go. And, so the first bus came and there was like 20 people or something like, he's gotten what he wanted out of it, which is to get attention and to raise money. And so now I think you'll see him kind of move away from and move on to the next thing.
And on to the next thing. That's the scary part. I mean, it's always what's next and what's going to be worse. But in the meantime, we're going to end up paying more at the grocery store for the things that our families need. And I hope people will, when they go, pay more for their produce at the grocery stores and more for the products that were coming across that southern border, because we do an awful lot of trade with Mexico. I hope that they'll at least understand that part of the inflation that we're suffering is because of Greg Abbott and these policies.
Yeah, we call it the Abbott tax, and it's one that we're paying. And the other one that we're paying is that, the natural gas folks made billions of dollars during the freeze when we were out of power for weeks. And in order to make up that margin, he's put a tax on every consumer's electric bill for the next decade to make up for that money. So there's plenty of Abbott taxes running around. This is just another one.
Rick, I appreciate
one thing. One thing, Rick, I want to say, I don't know if you saw, I know that Ted Cruz was really vigorously supporting the truckers convoy when they were coming to D.C. I've been looking at the news. I haven't seen Ted lining up with the Mexican truckers today. Have you seen that? Have you seen Ted on that
program? I have
not. No. Interesting.
But I have called on the truckers convoy to make that detour and had to head on down there and support their brothers and sisters and their fellow truckers down there.
There you go.
That's what they should be doing. Solidarity.
Right.
There you go. Cross border.
Yes, sir.
Rick, I appreciate the time, man. Thanks so much.
Hey, Rick, thank you so much for having me. I apologize for saying the bad things sometimes, but sometimes things need to be said. Anyway, hang in there. Thank you for your voice. Thank you for your work. And let's talk again sometime.
Anytime. Our good friend, Rick Levy, president of the Texas AFL-CIO. Let's take a quick break. Back with your thoughts. 1-866-416-RICK. 1-866-416-7425. This is The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
You're listening to the best of The Rick Smith Show. This is what we were talking about 1 year ago today.
If you're a fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in Two segments, and you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible 2-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to thericksmithshow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs, in the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at thericksmithshow.com/history today.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
You're listening to the best of The Rick Smith Show. 1-866-416-RICK, 1-866-416-7425. If you're just joining us, make sure you check out the podcast at thericksmithshow.com. You know, and it's one of those things. Look, I said from the beginning, these truckers, I stand with them. At the end of the day, we should be standing with the truckers of the trucker convoy and making sure that they have an opportunity to, to be heard, to be seen, to be, to make a living. And, where is Ted Cruz? That is a good question. It really is. That is a good question. Now, interesting that he brought up energy. In a place like Texas, you'd think that they would have an abundance of it. And like he said, they got to make up those profits, got to gouge where they can. Now, I found it interesting that Well, Joe Manchin. Yes, Joe Manchin. Joe Manchin evidently said to a group that there's this idea of rebranding or rerouting the Keystone XL pipeline. Evidently, he visited Canada recently, and he said the brand of the XL pipeline is probably gone. Can it be rebranded? Can it be rerouted? Can it be these different things? He added that not sure what the Biden administration was going to do. But it made me think that I'm sure whatever Biden wants, this has got to be something that is going to, I'm sure Manchin's going to push for. Now, understand, the Keystone pipeline is pumping. It's operational. It's pumping crude as we speak. The Keystone XL pipeline, that was going to take the dirty stuff, the tar sands oil, and that was going to move it right through the indigenous lands, right through some water, some really important through Nebraska and some waterways and some place that you really don't want it to go, considering that this stuff is like the dirtiest of the dirty, this thick, acidic, nasty, corrosive stuff that, well, we know has a history of eating through pipelines and leaking and causing all kinds of chaos. And what we also know is this was never going to help us because we don't actually have a refinery in this country to refine this nasty stuff. This was going to go right through the middle of our country, right out through Texas and out into the international community. This is never going to help us. So anyone who tells us, if we just had that Keystone XL pipeline, this would solve our problems, they're lying to you. Now, should we be drilling more in this moment? Yeah, we should be increasing production, and I agree with that. But that's not Joe Biden. And this is where all those people are, you're not a working class person, you don't know. Yeah, I do know. I know what the energy companies are saying. I've heard their calls. Their calls are like, screw this, we don't need to increase production. We like the prices high. Why? Because it's putting more money in our pocket. Because that's corporate America. Corporate America is happy where prices are. It means they're fattening the bottom lines. Perfect story today. You wonder why food prices are high? You wonder why when you go to the grocery store, prices are really high? Part of it is we just created 3 new billionaires. James, Austin, and Marianne Cargill are all newly certified billionaires. They're in the new ranks of the top 500 world's richest people. They each now have a new wealth of $5.3 billion, up 20%. Huh, up 20%. That's weird. Their wealth's up 20%. Inflation's been up pretty high, I wonder. Now, Cargill is one of the oldest, founded back in 1865, one of the biggest privately held companies, massive producer of grain and food. Numerous people on the billionaire list, worth billions of dollars. And, what's going on? Well, they're getting richer. Why? Because prices are high. And again, why are prices high? Because they're gouging the crud out of us. And yet, what I keep getting from people, Joe Biden's fault. And you go, no, dummy. This is corporate America's fault. And this is where Joe Walsh is right. Democrats have not done a good job at messaging. There should, in this moment, and this is what FDR would have done. You go after these profiteers. You get a commission. And I said this during the pandemic. We need to get a Truman-esque commission to go after these pandemic profiteers. We need someone who's going to step forward and take this on and ensure that nobody gouges working class people the way they are. And then we hold them accountable. But that can only happen if you got sane, rational politicians who are going to fight for them. You got a Kyrsten Sinema who's saying, we're not going to raise
We're not going to raise a minimum corporate tax. You got problems. Love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, Rick at thericksmithshow.com. Also, if you're just joining us.
The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK, 540 AM, Waukesha's only news talk station.
CBS News Brief. Clay County Prosecutor Zachary Thompson says he has charged a white man with first-degree assault in the shooting of a black teenager in Kansas City, Missouri.
As the prosecutor of Clay County, I can tell you there was a racial component to the case.
16-year-old Ralph Yarl's family says he went to the wrong home to pick up his siblings. At a Dadeville, Alabama girl's 16th birthday party, shots rang out, leaving four dead, including her brother. CBS's Omar Villafranca.
The mother, LaTanya Allen, was also shot twice, and she told me she still has a bullet stuck in her side and in her leg. She's going to be fine, but she told me her focus now is on fighting the killers and planning her son's funeral.
At least 32 people are injured, no arrests reported. The Biden administration urges Americans trapped in the African nation of Sudan to shelter in place as two factions battle in the streets of that nation's capital. UN spokesman Stephane Dujarric.
I can tell you that the situation is extremely tense and frankly dangerous.
CBS News Brief. I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Big Bend to Menominee Falls. Always streaming at WAUKradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. The wildfires in Wisconsin are out. The Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources says crews put out the biggest of them, the Arcadia Fire, on Saturday. It burned more than 3,000 acres, closed roads, and forced people out of their homes for 3 days. No one was hurt. Now comes damage assessment. A Republican bill would stop communities in Wisconsin from using public money for local guaranteed income programs. They're different from other government subsidies since they're not restricted to things like rent or food. Right now, Madison is the only city in Wisconsin with a guaranteed income program. In sports, Giannis Antetokounmpo is day-to-day after he bruised his back in last night's playoff loss to Miami. The Brewers open a three-game series at Seattle tonight. I'm Terry Bell, and this is Civic Media News.
The Civic Media team would like to say congratulations. More than 200 Wisconsin businesses and nonprofits are receiving a free advertising campaign through our one-day $1 million advertising giveaway. If you missed out, our local sales team would still love to help you with your own campaign. Go to civicmedia.us and click on the sponsorship tab. Again, civicmedia.us and sponsorship. New and still growing. Advertise today with a Civic Media network of radio stations.
Max Inc. Radio with Dennis Graham from Rockonson.
Appreciate all the support of Mad Radio 92.7. And by the way, a tip of the hat to Civic Media. That was a great article in the Cap Times by Paul Fanlon. You guys got a great model that you're growing around the state, local interest with radio stations throughout these different markets. And a tip of the hat, and you're focusing on local music and nobody's doing it. So great job.
Listen to Max Inc. Radio Saturday night, 6 to midnight on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ad Council and Pivotal Ventures.
You're listening to the best of the Rick Smith Show. This is what we were talking about a year ago today.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So lots of great activity coming out around the General Counsel of the National Labor Relations Board. In fact, you saw a bunch of tweets coming out from our friend, Representative Andy Levin from Michigan, pointing out that, look, the General Counsel is now saying, hey, look, There's a better way to organize. Yeah, kind of like we used to in the old days. And this is one of these weird moments where the things that she's talking about are the way it used to be. In fact, you know, when I was doing organizing, you know, back in the 90s, you know, I would tell my grandfather about all the things that we were doing, all the obstacles and all the problems and all the, and he's like, you know, what? That's not how we do it. And you know how older people, and we do it, I do it to my kids. That's not how we did it when I was your age. And you know what? He was right. It was better back then, and which is why I'm glad that, well, I'm glad that she's bringing this back and here to share some thoughts on, well, what Jennifer Abruzzo is doing and what the general counsel at the NLRB is bringing up. And will this stick? Will this help? Will this make a difference? I've asked our good friend, labor lawyer and, well, labor lawyer superhero, Paul Segunda. Paul, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks, Rick, for having me as always.
So let's start with this, what the general counsel's throwing out here, this idea, this Joy Silk doctrine. We've been talking about it here recently. And as I told you during the break, you know, back in the day, you know, it's not something that I knew about. Kind of understood that back in the old days, it wasn't always like what we were going through, forced to go through elections, forced to go through captive audience meetings, forced to go through employers browbeating employees.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're in this moment here all along, maybe possibly could have avoided some of all that. I'm curious your thoughts.
Yeah, well, it's a big moment. It's monumental. A lot of these statements by the General Counsel of the National Labor Relations Board are statements that some of us in the labor law community have been waiting for literally decades. For instance, with captive audience meetings, where you bring in people and you force them to listen to anti-union rants, employees don't want to hear it. Doesn't matter. They had to sit there. They had to listen. And if they didn't want to listen, if they even spoke out, they could be fired. And I and others had argued many, many years ago, maybe 20 years ago, that that's ridiculous. That's coercive. That's in restraint of their Section 7 rights. And they shouldn't be subjected to that. And yet that was the law probably from about 1960 until perhaps today. And what the general counsel has said is, look, that's a reprisal. Forcing people to listen without being able to communicate is not speech. It's not employer speech protected by Section 8C of the National Labor Relations Act. It is coercive, intimidating conduct in violation of Section 8A1. It's an unfair labor practice. We're not going to have it. Similarly, the Joy Silk Doctrine, which is just a fancy, fun name for a doctrine that used to require an employer to show good faith doubt that a union no longer had a majority, or that there wasn't a majority who wanted that union to be in place, that they changed that. So it was much easier for employers to decertify unions. We've seen a lot of that, of course, lately. And the hope is, Rick, that these statements, these initiatives by the current general counsel of the NLRB will put the thumb back on the scale so it's a little more evenly balanced and workers can truly be represented by someone of their own choosing if that's what they want.
Yeah. Now, I go back to the reason I bring up my grandparents, because both of them were big union activists. They were both union members virtually all of their working lives. My grandfather actually, you know, in numerous workplaces, you know, worked to get unions into those workplaces. And the stories that he told were not these Herculean leaps of, you know, worrying about is your job going to be on the line? Do you have to go through the kind of captive audience, you know, browbeatings that come along with this?
Yeah.
And I remember telling him these things and he couldn't believe it that, you know, in this country where you have the right to organize, and he kept coming back to this, you know, his generation firmly believed and internalized that they had a right to organize. It was their right, and they fought for that right, and they demanded their rights. And this is one of those moments where I hope by seeing what she's putting out, and maybe it once again makes us look at the National Labor Relations Act and look at this, you know, for 85 years, the Supreme Court has affirmed that we have the right, a fundamental right to organize. And maybe as workers, we go, yeah, it's our right. And damn it, we're going to fight for it.
Let's hope so. I mean, when the Wagner Act was first passed in 1935, it was very clear that its purpose was to promote collective bargaining by allowing workers to organize into units of their own choosing and to use that collective power to bargain more beneficial terms and conditions of employment. Now, what happened was, starting in 1947 with the Taft-Hartley Act, we had a pushback. We had a movement by conservatives who actually overrode the veto of President Truman at the time and basically said, it's not about promoting collective bargaining, it's really about free choice. And they kind of put all their weight on this idea of free choice, that we don't care what employees do as far as unions, not unions, but we want them to have free choice. Of course, this was a sleight of hand. This was a sleight of language, because what it allowed to, what employers were able to do, is use language and other types of conduct to threaten, intimidate, and otherwise make it impossible for employees to actually engage in a free and open vote. And as a result, a lot of employees were not actually voting how they felt. There was a famous statistic, Rick, and you might be familiar with it, called the representation gap. It's the yearly gap that we see between how many employees help unions win elections in this country versus how many employees say, like in a Gallup poll or a Pew Research poll, that they're either in favor of unions or they themselves would like to be in a union. And there is a gap. There is a substantial gap between those who say they want to be in a union and those who will actually vote yes in a union, because they're scared, they're intimidated, they're browbeated. So all of what's happening in the last week and today is welcome news if we really care about promoting collective bargaining and true free choice, as far as whether workers want to be in a union or not.
No, and to that point, you know, if these captive audience meetings didn't work, if the millions of dollars they spend on these union busters coming in and browbeating your employees didn't work, corporate America wouldn't be spending the money. If the return on investment wasn't there, they wouldn't be spending it. If Amazon wasn't getting what they wanted out of these union busters coming in, they wouldn't be spending $200 million in Bessemer, Alabama, right, to deny 5,000 workers the right to have a say in that one workplace. They wouldn't be spending that kind of money.
Well, because they know that once workers get that right and that power, others are going to want it too. Look at the Starbucks situation. It started with one. I think we're up to 18 or 19 bargaining units now, including in the home store in Seattle. So what happens is, when workers are actually told the truth, understand what the union brings to them, it equalizes power in the workplace. It's you know, when you say to workers, okay, your employer's Amazon. You are one individual. Do you think that you have any ability to bargain any term or condition of employment with Amazon? And the answer is, of course you don't. It's a take it or leave it situation. If you don't like it, go somewhere else. Well, that's true with one person. But what if there are units that are made up of hundreds or thousands of workers who can truly upset the operations of the company, can disrupt the company until they're treated with dignity and fairness? Well, you change the calculation. Yeah. And that's all we're talking about. We're trying to equalize the field between the so-called industrial combatants here.
You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're with Paul Segonda, former labor law professor, current labor superhero attorney, one of my favorite guys on the planet. I think you're a really good guy.
I think you're
one of those people out there fighting the good fight, Paul. I really do.
We should start a mutual admiration society.
But here's the thing. You said a moment ago, it's about language. And we hear the language of choice. We hear the language of freedom. We hear the language of liberty. And I'm sure you know where I'm going with this. They throw this kind of, you know, it's on the individual. You're going to have, we do it with education. We do it with a lot of things. And usually it's the choices you get are between bad and much worse, or really no choice at all. And it seems like we're moving back to the bad old days, you know, well before the Wagner Act, well before my grandparents' generation knew they had rights. To the old days of, well, if you were desperate enough and hungry enough,
to work in deplorable conditions for poverty wages. Well, that was your liberty. It was your liberty to contract with whoever you wanted. I still see us moving in this direction because of our Supreme Court. Now, as you said to me during the break, you know, this is a great moment. We're in a moment, but sadly things can change. And this is where, you know, I'm thrilled that Jennifer Abruzzo is moving us in the direction. I'm thrilled we've got the most pro-union president that we've had in my lifetime. I'm thrilled that there's all this energy of people going, yes, we are demanding unions. And yes, there's all this you know, want now. But the moneyed interest, they play the long game. And they're still pushing. They're still pushing to take us back to the good old days of the 80s and 90s, and not the 1980s and 90s, back to the old Lochner era, which I see coming back.
I was wondering when you were going to use that awful word, Lochner. For your listeners, Lochner was a case called Lochner versus New York, United States Supreme Court, 1905, where they basically were asked to look at bakers and whether they could be forced to work insane hours at their employer's behest, or whether we could have maximum hour laws. And the Supreme Court, which was ruled by kind of the same types of conservatives that were ruled by today, said, well, it's freedom of contract. It's liberty of contract. And if employees want to work 100 hours a week, and if they die because of that, well, that's their choice. And of course, that is hogwash. I would have used another word, but this is a family show.
Thank you.
And it's hogwash because, of course, you can't make a free choice when your choice is a Hobson's choice, meaning, you know, it's either work 100 hours or not work at all. So what are you going to do? You're going to work because you have to put food on the table. You have to keep shelter over your family's head. And so this was the situation from about 1905 until about 1935, when we finally got the Wagner Act. The Wagner Act was upheld as constitutional under a case called Jones and Laughlin in the late 1930s. And since then, we've been passing protective legislation, whether it be for overtime and minimum wages, whether it be for pensions and health plans, whether it be for occupational safety and health. But what we're seeing now is a move by the moneyed interests, you know, the Koch brothers and others of the similar ilk, who are pushing in particular mandatory arbitration clauses, which require you not to work together with your brothers and sisters to make your workplace better, but require you individually in an unaccountable setting, meaning in front of an arbitrator who doesn't even put out decisions that are precedential. You have to fight this fight alone individually. And if you lose, oh, well. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing kind of a pushback through mandatory arbitration to Lochner and the freedom of contract. Now, I will say to you one thing. There was one good development in this area, Rick, and I don't know if you've talked about it on your previous shows, but they did outlaw so-called non-disclosure agreements within arbitration when it comes to sexual harassment and sexual assault. That's great, but it needs to be expanded to all sorts of workplace problems. Sexual harassment, yes, but also if there's an issue regarding union organizing, or if there's an issue involving occupational safety and health, or if there's an issue involving, you know, fair payment of overtime and other types of wages that people earn. Until we have that, employees are going to be forced into this idea of freedom of contract in the form of mandatory arbitration, and they're going to have very few rights in the workplace at the end of the day.
And this is one of these things why these are the issues that I think we need to really be focused on in come election time. And it's not. These are things that very few people ever talk about or know very little about, which is why I think it's so important to have people like you come on and explain this, because it can be complicated. This is kind of a weedy thing, but it's something that the right wing, the moneyed interest, the think tank world, the State Policy Network, the Koch brothers, it's something that they know well. And it's something, to be honest, that they've used to their advantage to make our lives worse. Because look, the reality is CEO pay didn't go up nearly 1,000% over the last 50 years, whereas workers' pay has only gone up 12% just by happens chance. Yeah. It's happened because they've been crushing labor unions and crushing our ability to demand better wages, hours, and conditions. And they've been doing it within the confines of the NLRB, taking over the NLRB and through the courts. And this is where, again, this is part of why this stuff is so important.
Yeah, we always talk, you and I, Rick, about the importance of having good Supreme Court justices, and hopefully Justice Brown will fit that mold exactly. I know in her previous decision, she seems to have understood the importance of legislation like this and why it is constitutional and permissible. But, you know, the problem is when you have decisions like a few years ago, there was a decision called EPIC, which permitted mandatory arbitration clauses, even though they're in a violation of allowing collective action under the National Labor Relations Act, EPIC systems. There's also been laws, of course, called right to work, which, as we know, doesn't really mean right to work. It means the right to work for less, or the right to not be able to organize because we can't, as unions, get membership dues. These are all well thought out ploys through ALEC, through the Koch brothers, through the Chamber of Commerce, through a National Federation of Businesses. I mean, you name it. They are all in this together to try to deny power from workers. And if we believe that if we vote in a way that is, you know, it seems like it's for our pocketbook, but it really isn't. If we're not voting for labor rights, if we're not voting for politicians who will put into place judges and others who will uphold labor rights, union rights, then quite literally, but also figuratively, we're going to be poorer for it.
No, there's no question about this. So last question I've got for you on this, because, again, I'm thrilled that the general counsel is moving in this direction and being much more of an advocate. And I would argue, trying to do the mission of the act, which is to encourage not just to be there as a neutral arbitrator, but to actually encourage people to join and form unions, because this is one of those central tenet kind of things. It's not just to be there to be the referee, but to actually be there to go, you know, we as a government want people joining and forming unions. We want people fighting for better wages, hours, conditions, because we know it's beneficial for all of society. Do you fear, as some have, because I've gotten some people going, well, you know, she's a little too far out there, Rick. The blowback, you know, is going to be just as bad on the other side. Thoughts on that kind of thinking?
Well, the blowback has already started. If you look at the budget request that the NLRB made this year, they got nothing. Other labor agencies, OSHA, the Employee Benefits Security Administration, the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, all got additional monies to run their agencies. The NLRB alone was the one that didn't get any money in addition to what they've run in previous years. And that's because the general counsel is being an advocate. And you're right. She is actually, if you read the preamble of the National Labor Relations Act, it says we need to promote collective bargaining in order to diminish industrial strife. If we don't have a system whereby we can channel industrial disputes into a constructive mechanism whereby labor and management can figure out their differences, we are going to either have one party having too much power, which is what we have with management right now, or we're going to have more industrial strife in the form of strikes, boycotts, pickets. And we've seen a lot more of that as well. So I think already the general counsel and her agency are being punished by the Republicans in Congress. I'm not sure outside of President Biden and a few others in the Congress that the Democrats are doing enough to support the National Labor Relations Board. And you know what's going to happen, Rick, if the Republicans come back into power in the Congress after 2022. We'll have the veto of the president, but otherwise it could get very ugly very quickly. And absolutely, when the board becomes Republican dominated again, it will flip back hard in favor of management interests, just like we saw with the previous general counsel, who didn't even believe in the act. He thought his role, excuse me, was to destroy unions, which is remarkable, given that's completely contrary to what the law says. So,
but very predictable.
I'm worried a little bit, but let's enjoy today and let's build momentum so that we prevent that from happening in the future.
There you go. Paul, as always, great stuff. I appreciate you taking some time for us. Thanks so much.
Okay, you're welcome, Rick.
Our good friend Paul Segunda, former law professor, labor superhero in my view, does fabulous work. You just heard. I mean, he's a bright guy. Love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break right here. Some thoughts on the other side to wrap things up. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. Listening to the best of The Rick Smith Show. This is what we were talking about 1 year ago today. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1919. Labor leader and socialist Eugene V. Debs was sent to prison for speaking out against World War I. Debs was a well-known figure. In 1894, he had led the American Railway Union out on a strike against the Pullman Railway Car Company. A quarter of a million railway workers walked off the job in support of the strike until it was brutally crushed by the United States military. Debs was arrested and served time in prison for his role in the strike. Due to his popularity, government officials were alarmed by Debs' pacifist stance. So, in 1917, when he gave a speech against World War I in Canton, Ohio, he was arrested under the Espionage Act. The act had been passed a few months prior, making it illegal to interfere with the armed services' recruitment efforts during wartime. At his trial in a federal court in Cleveland, Ohio, Debs defended himself. In his final statement, he explained his motivation. "I am thinking this morning of the men in the mills and the factories, of the men in the mines and on the railroads. I am thinking of the women who, for a paltry wage, are compelled to work out their barren lives, of the little children who, in this system, are robbed of their childhood." He was found guilty, and so, on this date, he started his 10-year sentence. In Cleveland, infuriated unionists and socialists led a protest of Debs' imprisonment. Violence broke out during the march. Mounted police and even tanks were brought in to suppress the demonstrators. In the aftermath, two people were killed, more were injured, and dozens were arrested. While in prison, Debs ran for president of the United States on the socialist ticket, receiving nearly 1 million votes. Finally, in 1921, President Harding commuted Debs' sentence to time served. Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, thericksmithshow.com. You know, the reality is, listen, you know, one of the things I love about Paul is, you know, he'll give us the history lesson every which way possible, because, look, he's a bright guy. I could sit and listen to him all day long. And the thing that he hit on, I think is most important, the language that they used, you know, it's about choice, it's about freedom, it's about liberty. And yet they know, as he pointed out, they know that they can scare the bejeebies out of people. They know that they can just get into your ear, that they can plant that seed that, you know, you vote for a union, we might close this place. You know, they're going to take all of your power away. You didn't have any power to begin with. You know, our open door policy that you never use, that has never worked for you, you know, that could close to you. And they do this, and they're very, well, they're very cagey about how they do this stuff. And a lot of times they're right out in front about it. But, you know, one of my favorite messaging things that they do is this, you know, people aren't choosing unions anymore. And the reason a lot of people aren't doing it, because a lot of people don't want to go through the browbeating and the harassment and the intimidation. And this thing by the general counsel, this is kind of a BFD. This is kind of a big deal. This is kind of taking it back to where my grandparents' generation, they overwhelmingly said, yeah, it's what we want. And, oh, by the way, we're going to negotiate.
There was none of this, oh, let's have captive audience meetings. Oh, let me harass you for a couple of months, and then we'll hold an election. There was no, we're marching on the office. Tomorrow we begin negotiations. That's how my grandparents' generation did it. I think they had something there. Anyway, if you missed any of today's program, therickSmithShow.com. That's where you go to get the podcast, The Rick Smith Show app on the smartphone. Take the program on the go wherever you go. And as always, email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Thanks for being here. See you next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick. Email Rick at Rick.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.